a wolf that eats all but one of seven little goats left at home by their mother. A brother and sister shoved in an oven by an old witch. A girl beaten for her gluttony for eating seven pieces of bacon. Wow, seven, I'm in trouble. A wicked stepmother burned at the stake. An evil queen who sends a huntsman to kill her beautiful stepdaughter. And when he fails, later poisons her with an apple. Princesses being locked up in dungeons or towers. An imp by the name of Rumpelstiltskin, who in a fit of rage tears himself in two. You may find all of these terrifying things and more in a not so little book, Children's and Household Tales, perhaps better known as Grimm's Fairy Tales, a collection of over 200 tales and fables collected by the Brothers Grimm and first published in 1812. Considered one of the founding works of Western culture, many of these stories, especially in their original form, were criticized even in their day for hardly being suitable for children because of their sexual references and violence. Can you imagine writing such stories for children today? Dr. Seuss, they're not. But in giving voice to our childhood terrors, perhaps they serve a purpose. As Tolkien cautioned, it does not pay to leave a dragon out of your calculations if you live near him. For little German children living on the edge of the Black Forest in the 19th century, fairy tales might have been more practical than they appear today. There were dragons, or at least dangers, lurking in those woods, frightening children to keep them out of the forest at least until they were old enough to protect themselves seems like wise parenting. But there may be a purpose for the fairy tales beyond practical parenting. In the mid-70s, controversial psychologist Bruno Bettelheim explored the meaning and purpose of fairy tales in his book, The Uses of Enchantment. There, Bettelheim believed fairy tales, in their depiction of being lost or abandoned, threatened by strangers or even those they trust, facing injury or death, even in fantastical situations and forms, fairy tales gave voice to children's real fears. Being able to explore these childhood terrors from the distance of a fairy tale would better prepare children to face similar terrors in life. Making sense of these fairy tales, the terrors they portray, and the resolutions they offer in their own way would give children the emotional strength to face their fear, their terror, when the witches and wolves were real. To those of us raised on the Disney version of some of Grimm's classics, it begs the question, do we do our children a disservice in shielding them from some of these fantastical terrors? I remember questioning Will and Elizabeth reading Harry Potter because of the violence. The prohibition didn't last when we discovered Elizabeth reading Harry Potter by placing it inside of another book. But at the time, the fantastical violence was a concern. Now I'm not so sure. Part of why I've changed my mind is I see something similar happening in the life of faith. The Bible is full of terrifying stories, which we seldom preach or teach our children. When we do venture out into these dangerous waters, we quickly resolve the terror and jump to the happy ending. When was the last time you heard a sermon on the plagues of the Exodus, particularly the killing of the firstborn of the Egyptian children? Our God had a hand in that. That's terrifying. Or God's command to Saul to kill all the Amalekites, men, women, and children, as well as all of their animals. That's terrifying. Yes, we all know the story of the binding of Isaac, where God told Abraham to sacrifice his son. But we quickly jump to the ram caught in the thicket. We can't dwell on the horror of a God who would make such a demand. It's terrifying. In case you think the God of the New Testament is somehow less terrifying, read the stories of the foolish bridesmaids and so many others who were left weeping and gnashing their teeth. Or the rich young man who was asked to give up everything he owned. Or the innocent children killed by Herod. Or the texts of Holy Week, beginning with our reading this morning. There are terrifying stories to be found throughout the Bible. The lectionary reading for Palm Sunday, Luke 22, verse 14 through chapter 23, verse 56, is much longer than our reading this morning. Our reading this morning marks Jesus' entry into Jerusalem and his welcome by the crowds. The lectionary reading for today actually begins a few days later in Holy Week, when Jesus is breaking bread with his disciples in the upper room. Had we read this longer passage, we would have listened as the disciples argued about who among them is the greatest. And we would have heard Peter deny that he would ever deny Jesus. We would have watched Judas enjoy communion with Jesus and then run off to betray him. We would have slept while Jesus prayed in the garden and been awakened when the temple police came for him. We would have waited in the courtyard while Jesus was questioned by the chief priests and Pilate, all the while denying we knew the man. We would have fled, or perhaps watched from a distance as he was tortured and crucified. Tell me, this is not a terrifying story. We didn't read the story this morning because it's long and frankly doesn't play well on a Sunday morning. We're part of a church culture that prefers to go from watching our children parade with palms to the beauty of the lilies on Easter morning. A few of us will venture out on Maundy Thursday, even fewer on Good Friday. As a result, most of us will miss the terror of this week. Now, I'm not saying this to make you feel guilty or to fill the pews on Thursday and Friday. I love seeing the children and the lilies as much as anyone. It's just, I know if we close our eyes to the terror of this week, we will never know the full joy of Easter morning and the new life it brings. Our deepest terrors will not have been voiced. Our deepest fears will not have been embraced by God. We may see the glory. We may appreciate the beauty of Easter. But we will never know what Christ has done for us. The terror begins with the chaos of the crowd. Christ has taken great care in crafting his message. He sent his disciples to borrow a donkey that he might ride into Jerusalem. Why? So the people could see he, not Herod, not Pilate, Christ is their king. The people understand. They're waving palm branches, laying garments on the road, shouting Hosanna, echoing the great biblical passages foretelling the coming of God's Messiah. Even the Pharisees see what's going on and try to silence the crowd. Jesus tells them, if these were silent, the stones would shout out. Meaning, what is happening here is God's doing. Silence the crowd, and all creation would shout the proclamation, Jesus Christ is Lord. So what's so terrifying? Okay, Jesus is confronted by the Pharisees. When didn't this happen? Much of his ministry, Jesus is fighting with the Pharisees. What's so terrifying? Not much if we leave now and come back on Easter. But if we stay with Jesus this week, we see the people who sang his praises on Palm Sunday are the same ones who cried for his crucifixion on Good Friday. What's really terrifying? In time, we begin to see ourselves in that crowd. We love Jesus dearly. Until he tells us to welcome immigrants and refugees, or treat people of color, or members of the LGBT community, or Muslims and Jews, or women and the poor, with respect and dignity. We love Jesus. Until we hear him say, grace trumps morality. And the common good is more important than our personal freedom. We love Jesus. Until he starts asking why the Pacific Ocean has become a garbage dump. And the people of Flint have no clean water. And children around the world are deprived of their daily bread. We love Jesus. Until he starts meddling in politics and challenges us to use our wealth and our power in godly ways. We love Jesus until he tells us to forgive our friends or our family to set aside our petty jealousies, to remember people are more important than things. It's terrifying how easily our hosannas turn to crucify him. But we won't see this if we're not here Good Friday. We can ignore the denial and betrayal, the violence and treachery, if we're not here Good Friday. Our terror will not be heard. Our fears will remain buried. Our accountability ignored if we're not here Good Friday. Sadly, as glorious as Easter is, our redemption will not come. And the joy of resurrection life will elude us. For we will not see what Christ has done if we are not here Good Friday. Long before Palm Sunday, Jesus saw the terror of it all and willingly offered his life that we might live. Sisters and brothers, the point of looking at the terrifying side of life and our relationship with Christ, the point of standing by Jesus through Holy Week, is not to make us feel guilty or ashamed. The point is to put us in a place where we can see clearly what God has done. God does not simply weep for us and wring his hands as Christ wept for Jerusalem. God does not simply pronounce judgment upon us for eternity. God is present in the midst of our treachery and violence. God has taken our fears, our terror, our cruelty upon himself to save us. Friends, I love Disney movies. I still cry when I watch Lion King, Mulan, Pocahontas, and Bambi. I get the appeal of a Disney faith. But such a faith will not sustain us when we must face our deepest fears or the terror of life. When we discover the tumor in our daughter's breast or our son's brain. When our father or husband no longer remembers our name or our mother must go on hospice care. When our employer or our spouse says we are no longer needed. When the world's violence comes to our door. When the crowd or our friends turn against us. We need to know God has gone this way before. Like a vulture, death lurks in every shadow of Holy Week and every crevice of life. The terror of it all is that God wills this. Jesus embraces this because we have caused this. But ours is a God who won't back down. Ours is a God who, passing through waving palm branches, will not bypass the cross. Facing the terror of it all, the pain, the ambiguity of our love, Christ says to each of us, as He hangs upon that cross, "Beloved, I still love you.